Eagerly, Nicholas climbed down into the coffer. It was not yet empty, but he could not control his impatience. The water was knee-deep as he crawled forward into the opening, and with his bare hands tried to shift some of the rock debris that choked it. "It's definitely some sort of a shaft," he shouted back. And Rohan could not restrain herself either. She came slithering and sloshing down into the coffer and pushed into the opening beside him. "There's an obstruction," she cried in disappointment. "Did Taita do that deliberately?"
"Might have," Nicholas gave his opinion.
"Hard to tell. A lot of this rubble and flotsam have been sucked in from the main flow of the river. But he might have filled the tunnel behind him as he pulled out. It's going to take a tremendous amount of work just to clear it enough to find out where this passage leads to."
Rohan's voice had lost its ring of excitement.
"I'm afraid it is," Nicholas agreed. "We're going to have to clear every bit of this rubbish by hand, and there won't be time for the niceties of formal archaeological excavation. We're just going to have to rip it out."
He clambered back out of the coffer and reached back to hand her up the bank.
"Well, at least we have the floodlights," he added. "We can keep the men working in shifts night and day until we get through."
"They have dammed the Dandira River," said Nahut Gudabi, and Gotthold von Schiller stared at him in astonishment.
"Dams a river? Are you certain?"
he demanded.
"Yes, Herr von Schiller.
We have a report from our spy in Harper's camp. He has over 300 men working in the gorge. That is not all. He has airdropped huge amounts of equipment and supplies. It is like a military operation. Our spy tells us that he even has an earth-moving machine, some sort of tractor, which he has brought in."
Von Schiller looked across the table at Jake Helm for confirmation, and Helm nodded.
"Yes, Herr von Schiller, that is true. Harper must have spent a large amount of money. The air charter alone could have cost him 50 grand.
Von Schiller felt the first stirrings of real passion since the urgent satellite message had summoned him from Frankfurt. He had flown directly to Addis Ababa, where the jet ranger had been waiting to carry him to the Pegasus base camp on the escarpment above the Abbey Gorge. If this was true, and he did not doubt Helm's word, then Harper was onto something of enormous importance. He looked out of the window of the Quonset hut to where the Dandira flowed down the valley below the base camp. It was a large river. To dam that volume of water would be an expensive and difficult project in this remote and primitive situation, not a project to be taken on lightly without the prospect of substantial reward. He felt a reluctant admiration for the Englishman's achievement.
"Show me where he has placed this dam," he ordered,
and Helm came around the table to stand beside him. Von Schiller was standing on his block, and their eyes were on the same level. Helm bent over the satellite photograph and carefully marked in the site of the dam. They both studied it for a minute, and then Von Schiller asked,
"What do you make of it, Helm?"
Helm shook his head, hunching it down on his bull-like shoulders.
"I can only guess."
"Guess, then,"
said Von Schiller. But still Helm hesitated.
"Go on.
Either he wants to move the water to another area downstream to use it for washing out a deposit, gold nuggets or artifacts made of precious metals, perhaps even to use it for hosing the overburden of the site of the tomb."
"Highly unlikely," von Schiller interjected. "That would be an inefficient and expensive manner of excavation."
"I agree that it is far-fetched," Nahut obsequiously followed von Schiller's lead.
But no one even looked at him.
"What is your other proposition?"
Von Schiller glared at Helm.
"The only other reason for damming the river that I can think of would be to reach something that has been covered by the water, something lying in the bed of the river."
This is more logical,"
von Schiller mused, and turned his attention back to the photograph.
"What is there below this dam site?"
"The river enters a deep and narrow ravine here," Helm pointed at the spot, "just below his dam. The ravine stretches about 8 miles, down to this point, just above the monastery. I have flown over it in the helicopter, and it seems to be impassable. And yet..." He broke off.
Yeah, go on. "And yet, what?"
"On one flight over the area, we found Harper and the woman on the high ground above the ravine.
They were at this spot, here. He touched the photograph, and von Schiller leaned forward to peer at it.
What were they doing there?
He demanded without looking up.
Nothing. They were merely sitting on the top of the cliff above the ravine.
But they were aware of your presence?
Of course. We were in the helicopter. They heard our approach. They were watching us. And Harper even waved.
And so they would have ceased whatever activities they were engaged in when they became aware of your approach?
Von Schiller was silent for so long that they began to fidget uncomfortably and exchange glances. When he spoke, it was so unexpected that Nahoot started.
Harper obviously has reason to believe that the tomb lies in the gorge below the dam. When and how do you make contact with your spy that you have in Harper's camp?
Harper is receiving some of his supplies from the villagers here on the escarpment. The women are driving down slaughter cattle to feed his men and carrying down pots of tej. Our man sends back his reports with the woman when they return.
Yeah, yeah, very well, very well.
Von Schiller waved him to silence.
I don't need to know his life history. All I want to know is if Harper is working in the ravine below this dam. How soon can you find this out?
By the day after tomorrow, at the latest, Helm promised him.
Von Schiller turned to Colonel Nogo at the far end of the conference table. So far, he had not spoken, but had watched and listened quietly to the others.
How many men have you deployed in this area?
Von Schiller asked.
Three full companies, over 300 men, all well trained. Many are battle-hardened veterans. Where are they? Show me on the map.
The colonel came to stand beside him.
One company here, another billeted at the village of Debra Mayam, and the third company at the foot of the escarpment, ready to move forward and attack Harper's camp.
I think you should attack them now. Wipe them out before they can uncover the tomb. Nahoot came in again.
Shut your mouth!
Von Schiller snapped without looking up at Nahoot.
I will ask for your opinion when I need it.
He considered the map for a while longer, then asked Nogo,
How many men has this guerrilla commander, what is his name, the one who has allied himself to Harper?
McNamur is not a guerrilla. He is a bandit, and notorious Schufter terrorist, Nogo corrected him hotly.
One man's freedom fighter is the next man's terrorist,
von Schiller remarked dryly.
How many men has he under his command?
Not many. Fewer than 100, perhaps no more than 50.
He has them all guarding Harper's camp and the dam.
Von Schiller nodded to himself, plucking at the lobe of his ear.
How did Harper and his gang return to Ethiopia? He mused. I know he flew from Malta, but it is not possible that the aircraft could have landed down there in the gorge.
He hopped down off his block and strutted to the window of the hut, through which he had a panoramic view spread below him. He stared down into the depths of the gorge, a vista of cliffs and broken hilltops and wild tablelands, smoked blue with distance.
How did they get in without being discovered by the authorities? Did he parachute in, the same way as he dropped his supplies?
No, said Nogo. My informer tells us that he marched in with McNamur some days before the supplies were dropped to him.
So, from where did he march?
Von Schiller pondered.
Where is the nearest airfield where a heavy aircraft could land?
If he came in with McNamur, then they almost certainly came in from the Sudan. That is where Nimmer operates from. There are many old abandoned airfields near the border. The war, Nogo shrugged expressively, the armies are always on the move. That war has been going on for 20 years.
From the Sudan,
von Schiller picked up the border on the map.
So they must have trekked in along the river.
Almost certainly, Nogo agreed.
Then just as certainly Harper plans to escape the same way. I want you to move the company of men that you have at Debra Mayam and deploy them here and here, on both banks of the river, below the monastery. They must be in a position to prevent Harper reaching the Sudanese border if he should try to make a run for it.
Yes, good, I understand. That is good tactics, Nogo nodded gloatingly, his eyes bright behind the lenses of his spectacles.
Then I want your remaining men moved down to the foot of this escarpment. Tell them to avoid contact with McNamara's men, but to be in a position to move forward very quickly and seize the dam area, and to block off the ravine below the dam as soon as I give you the word.
When will that be? Nogo asked.
We will continue to watch them carefully. If he makes a discovery, he will start moving the artifacts out. Many of them will be too large to conceal. Your informer will know about it. That is when we will move in on him.
You should move in on him now, Herr von Schiller, Nahut advised him, before he gets a chance to open the tomb.
Don't be an idiot, von Schiller snarled at him. If we strike too soon, we might never discover what he obviously has learned about the whereabouts of the tomb.
We could force him. If I have learned anything in my life, it is that you cannot force a man like Harper. There is a certain type of Englishman. I remember, during the last war with them.
He broke off and frowned.
No, they are very difficult people. You must not rush it now. When Harper makes a discovery in the ravine, that will be the time to pounce.
The frown faded, and he smiled a small, cold smile.
The waiting game. In the meantime, we play the waiting game.
The debris that filled the shaft was not so tightly packed that it completely blocked the flow of water through it. If it had done so, Nicholas would never have been sucked in by the current, as he had been on his first dive into the pool. There were still gaps in the blockage where the large boulders had lodged, or where a tree trunk had been sucked in and jammed sideways across the width of the tunnel. Through these sections, the water had found the weak spots and kept them open. Nevertheless, the debris had taken centuries to wedge itself in, and it required back-breaking effort to prise it apart. The clearing operation was further hampered by the lack of working space in the shaft. Only three or four of the big men from the Buffaloes were able to work in the shaft at any one time. The rest of the team were employed in passing back the rubble as it was levered out. Nicholas changed the shifts every hour. They had more labour than they needed, and changing them often meant that the men at the face were always rested and strong and eager to earn the bonus of silver dollars that Nicholas promised them for their progress along the shaft. At each change of shift, Nicholas disappeared into the mouth of the tunnel with sappers, steel tape, and measured the distance.
120 feet. Well done, the Buffaloes, he told Hanseth Sheriff, the foreman monk, and then watched the water trickling past his feet.
The floor of the tunnel was still sloping downwards at a constant angle. He looked back along it towards the pool, and now in the floodlights the rectangular shape of the walls was very clear to see. It was obvious that the tunnel had been designed and surveyed by an engineer. He transferred his attention back to the floor of the tunnel and watched the run of water, trying to judge how deep they were below the original river level.
80 or 90 feet, he estimated. No wonder the pressure in the mouth of the tunnel almost crushed me.
He broke off, as an unusually shaped fragment in the muck at his feet caught his eye. He stopped and picked it up, then took it to one of the flood lamps, and by its light examined it closely. As he rubbed it clean between finger and thumb, he began to grin. Sloshing back along the tunnel, he yelled, "Ryan!" Triumphantly brandishing the fragment, he demanded, "What do you make of that, then?" She was sitting on the wall of the coffer, and reached down and snatched the object out of his grasp.
"Oh, sweet Mary, where did you find this, Nicky?"
"Lying in the mud, right there in the adit, where it's been for the last 4,000 years, where one of Taita's workmen dropped and broke it, probably while he was sneaking a sup of wine behind the slave driver's back."
Eagerly, Royan held the broken shard of pottery up to the lamplight.
"You're right, Nicky," she exclaimed. "It's part of a wine vessel. Look at the flared neck and belled lip. But if there was any doubt, which there isn't, the black firing around the rim dates it perfectly in our period, no older than 2000 BC.
Still clutching the fragment of broken pottery, she jumped down into the mud and slush of the coffer and flung both arms around his neck.
"Further proof, Nicky. We are on Taita's tracks. Can't you get them to clear any faster? We're breathing down the back of the old rogue's neck."